Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
I learned something that I didn't know. Apparently, it's illegal, and it has been
since the 80s,
to violate terms of service.
Oh, that's right. It does go back to the 80s, doesn't it?
Yeah, the computer fraud. I was thinking 90s. No, the computer fraud
was like 87?
Was
it 87? 89?
Somewhere mid-80s. It doesn't really matter exactly what the year was, but you know, this thing goes back at least 30 years.
You know, that long legalese document that you've never probably read anytime you've ever gone onto some website or installed a software package. You know, they always present you with this long list of legalese phrases that probably wouldn't make much sense even if you actually did
read it. And a lot of times they'll just, you know, have the little box of click here that you agree to the terms of service. And then, you know, you can click where it says terms of service and it pops open another thing.
And sometimes if they're really serious about it, they'll make it so you have to scroll all the way down through the terms of service before the little OK box will light up and you can get on to using the software or website.
And of course, nobody reads those things.
No, of course,
which
not.
Is one of my huge reasons for why I'm so against so-called smart contracts.
Yeah.
Because nobody reads them.
People who are interested in libertarian philosophy know a guy named Han Herman Hoppe. He's a Rothbardian type of guy. And people probably know Jeffrey Tucker as well. Well, there's a conference, and there's been sort of some people pretending to be libertarians and then kind of worshiping or putting memes about Pinochet, you know, the guy in Chile that killed a bunch of communists and was a fascist himself. And
oh, yeah, let's make jokes about helicopter rides. Ha, 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 that's so funny.
Yeah, that's been going around a lot. And yeah, there's a lot of it that's probably just trolling, but there's actually, at least in my estimation, kind of a lot of it that's actually a little bit concerning as far as how the alt-right kind of tried to wedge into that part of it. And they've used some of what Hans Hermann Hoppe has wrote. And so, long story short, a picture came out. Jeffrey Tucker admonished him because somebody gave him a plastic helicopter and he was kind of jokingly holding it. And Jeffrey Tucker was like, that's really not funny. It's not good for the movement either. So a lot of people, you know, it's kind of inner drama going on. Well, a speech was posted today where Hans Hermann Hoppe listed a bunch of things that he thinks libertarians should do, among them being closing the borders and stopping immigration. This is a guy who supposedly...
He's been advocating that for several years.
That's not libertarian at all.
One of his specific claims is that, and it's pretty much racist, or if not, I mean, borderline saying, well, you know, we got to only allow people in who are going to be productive. And he even says in the speech, you know, most likely it's going to be white guys, you know, not exclusively.
That sounds pretty racist.
But most likely it's going to be white guys, you know, and it's like, on top of that. Oh, it's insane. On top of that, the thing that I just think is just such a weird argument is to claim that, well, they're going to come in and they're going to be likely to vote for more socialism, as if the United States right now is already some amazing free place. It's better than a lot of places, but this ship sailed 200 years ago.
We're going to stop these people from coming in and voting socialist by creating a complete fascist dictatorship.
Yeah.
Something along those lines, yes.
Yeah, but I just, you probably recall, a part of the reason that I wanted to call and talk to you about is because I kind of felt this split, some cracks for this split when Jeffrey Tucker wrote an article called Against Libertarian Brutalism.
And that was a long time ago, right? That was like several years ago.
And at the time, Christopher Cantwell came out and was like, wow, that's a load of crap. And the only thing, you only need to follow the non-aggression principle to be a libertarian. You can be the most racist person, which he's technically correct.
He is correct about that, which is why the non-aggression principle doesn't go far enough for being a good person. Even within New Hampshire, where we're doing this show from, you can definitely see within the so-called liberty movement here that there are people who are pretty good on a lot of issues, but they are xenophobic, and that, you know, that if it were to actually come to where we have the success level that we want, which is to say that, you know, New Hampshire truly becomes like this libertarian state where the government is being rolled back and, you know, government programs being ended, and we're letting the market take care of things, one thing that people are going to split on within the liberty movement is borders. Because if it comes to where where New Hampshire, say, let's say, goes all the way and secedes from the United States, there's going to be a very distinct schism within the movement before that even happens over the question of what to do with the borders. I guarantee it.
Well, we should definitely wind up putting signs warning people that they're about to enter Massachusetts, which there actually was a proposal several years ago to allow for that.
You got to be careful, man. If you're in New Hampshire toting a gun around and then you accidentally step into Massachusetts, you get pulled over by a cop. You're looking at felony charges. So
now,
that would be a good idea.
Just for the purpose of a joke, I would support building a 700-foot ice wall on the Massachusetts border just so that we could call ourselves the free folk north of the wall.
I wanted to continue a little bit on this subject of so-called libertarians and their opinions that, well, yeah, we really want liberty, but, you know, while we've got a big old state around and there's people who want to come here and vote from somewhere else and take welfare, well, we're just going to need to have a total police state to, you know, put a stop to that while we repeal the state from the inside, supposedly.
There was one of the speakers at Anarchapulco last year that was saying that.
Wow. I don't know who that was. There's a bunch of
speakers
there. Well,
she's a pretty Canadian girl, so she can wind up saying whatever she wants to.
Southern? Is that her name? Southern.
And then she decided not too long ago to go harass refugees in the Mediterranean that were fleeing American bombs.
She actually physically went there?
She was on one of the boats that was trying to prevent refugee boats from going to Italy.
Wow. That's crazy. And she calls herself a libertarian?
Yes. Yes.
Where do these people come from?
Well, comes from Canada.
Yeah, the right wing. Basically. It's been a long time infiltration of the liberty movement.
Right, and you know, there's this myth that libertarians are the natural allies of conservatives, so we should just go along with whatever conservatives want because Reagan.
I resigned my life membership from the National Party back in 2008 before they nominated Bob Barr because I was sick of how unprincipled the party had become. And it's sad. It's sad to see happen, but that's just the reality.
Yeah.
What can you do about it?
I always refer to myself as a principled libertarian because I don't want to be associated with the National Libertarian Party.
I don't blame people like Daryl for spending inordinate amounts of time trying to actually save the National Libertarian Party. I understand why they value it because it is, you know, that first gateway into libertarianism for a lot of people. And there's some value in the fact that they exist, and there's some value in that even if they aren't completely principled, that they might possibly be that gateway drug into
and
liberty.
If the National Party went away, and this is something that a lot of people don't understand, if the National Party went away, I guarantee you about three quarters of the state libertarian affiliates would just cease to exist.
There is a misperception that libertarians align more often with conservatives. It's not true. Libertarianism is just a moral philosophy that says, hey, don't hurt people in order to get your way. If you got an idea, then you should put that idea forward and persuade people to get
behind it. Good ideas don't require force.
Right. And that means that you might have to get creative because, you know, going to force is sort of the hallmark of an uncreative person or an uncreative idea.
It's what bullies do.
Right. You don't have a better idea, so you just want to hold a gun to somebody's
head.
Give
me your lunch money. Why should I give you my lunch money? Well, I'll punch you if you don't.
What does that actually mean?
What does what mean?
I mean, you know, the non-aggression principle.
Well, do you want to describe it? Because I just went through a description of it. I can say it again.
An example.
You want an example of what the non-aggression principle
means?
Because
I think a lot of people still don't understand what that means.
Well, in elementary school or
let's give an actual real-life example here. There was a footbridge that wound up getting built here in Keene. Cost, what was it, $1.2 million or $2.1
million? Somewhere between $1 and $2 million.
You know, cost a lot of money.
It's
the vast majority of that money wound up coming from a federal grant. Only about $100,000 of it got raised locally, but that was touted as, see, the community wants this because we raised $100,000 of this between $1 to $2 million to build this bridge.
As libertarians, we don't think that government can be good, even with all the good intentions in the world poured into it. The way government and its incentives are set up is to essentially, they're the reverse of what the incentives in life should be.
Right.
Whereas if you are failing in life in the marketplace, the market gives you signals to allow you to possibly correct those failures. And if you correct them, maybe you won't have your business go under or whatever it is you're trying to do. If you don't correct them, then you'll probably fail. Whereas with government, if you're doing the wrong thing, you get increased funding. If
right.
you're, you know, if you're being wasteful, then you get increased funding. And it's just the most
just
insane.
Look at your local public school.
Sure.
And
great example.
The worse the grades are, the more they wind up spending per student.
Yep.
Happens here in Keene all the time, where we go to these school board meetings and you'll hear, well, yeah, I know our grades are below average, but that's why we need to spend more per student. We don't want to be average.
Well, certainly that increased funding results in increased performance, right?
I don't think
no.
so.
No?
And there's also
really?
Declining population in the school system, and yeah, it's absolutely
so, yeah, declining
ludicrous.
Population and increased funding all
right,
at
because,
the same
see,
time.
We're not getting as much money from the state as we were last year. Yeah, because you have fewer students.
God has blessed you and those radicals in the Libertarian Party nationally, Daryl. I mean, I think it's a, you know, basically a waste of time, but you guys feel like it's worth it. You guys are putting time into trying to save the National Libertarian Party, and it's not an impossible task because
right.
it's still a pretty close split. Like, Gary Johnson didn't win by that much.
Right, and I even heard people say, well, I only voted for him because I didn't want a third ballot. So there was, you know,
this is this, within the party when he was nominated.
Right, within the convention.
So it went to a second ballot.
Went to a second ballot, and, you know, people just, they were exhausted. They didn't want a third ballot. They didn't want the vice presidential nomination to wind up going on further. So just go ahead. I know he's only just a couple of votes from winning, so go ahead and throw a vote. And then we can move on to other stuff and... It's really sad when you have that sort of stuff to where, you know, people really don't want something, but they go ahead and vote for it anyway because, well, you know, we'll have another ballot and I was hungry and wanted to be able to go get food.
So this is also another political tactic, mm-hmm. which is to be more dedicated than the other side, to
right.
wear out, to burn out the other side. I mean, we've attempted to engage in this locally here. There's a school board meeting that happens, and to some extent, because we're the minority in the room by a significant minority, you know, we benefit when the numbers change in our direction. Bitcoin is the world's most successful cryptocurrency. It was the first one. It's got a tremendous market effect. There's, you know, a large network all around the globe. It's a decentralized currency. It can't be taken out by governments. It can't be stopped, basically. And it does what it says it's going to do, which is to say it allows people to transfer wealth from one person to another pretty much directly across the world for relatively low fees.
And fairly quickly.
Yeah, and quickly. Cutting out the middleman, basically. Getting the banks, getting the governments out of money and having a money that can actually, you know, benefit the individual and increase your level of power over your own life rather than having politicians and bankers having power over it. So it's a huge paradigm shift. And it's been very, very successful. In fact, it's been so successful that it has hit certain growing pains that, well, you want to have. I mean, it's a good thing to have these growing pains, but ultimately you want them to go away at some point. And they have not gone away. The growing pains have to do with the number of transactions per minute, basically, or per second that the network is handling. It's full, and it can't handle any more. And so there have been these two sides that have been fighting for years over how to fix this problem with the transactions. The two sides have been fighting. One of them supports the segregated witness protocol. The other one supports increasing the so-called block size. And both of them say that their solution is the way, the one true way to fix Bitcoin.
Segregated witness, you know, it's just one of the ways and 2x of fixing that problem. But the problem is not
But it hasn't. Hold on, before you go on, segregated witness hasn't fixed the problem, right? Like, they implemented this thing, and even the people who support segregated witness have said, some of them, that it could take many months, possibly, before segregated witness starts to actually have an effect on reducing the amount of transactions in the blocks.
Right, because isn't there something, and I didn't listen to that interview with Roger Ver. Isn't there something to where very few of the miners are actually, you know, implementing SegWit, that it's something about the nodes, but not the miners?
No. All the miners had to be segregated witness. So the 95% of them had to be going for the segregated witness for it to even go into effect. So all of them are segregated witness capable at this point. The question is, will the users upgrade their software, like their wallet software, to go to a segregated witness-based wallet? And have you?
I don't know how.
Is Bitcoin, the latest version of Bitcoin Core, support segregated witness?
I'm not running a full node, so I
have
no clue.
You don't
have
to run a full node. The segregated witness is supposed to be something that anybody can use.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
I'm trying to warn people about the segregated witness, or the SegWit2x, of being what I believe is the banker takeover of Bitcoin. A lot of people think...
A banker's takeover? Is that what you said?
Exactly.
Well, hold on a second. Now, isn't it true that the Bitcoin core team, a lot of them are being paid by a company called Blockstream?
You know, I will have to look that up.
I've read that that's true. So maybe it's not true if somebody wants to, you know, rebut that, but... You know, please rebut if you know anything different. But my understanding is this Blockstream company was funded by a big bank to the tune of like $100+ billion. And now that money's being used to hire these programmers and get them on the side of what this Blockstream company wants Bitcoin to be, which is this, you know, very expensive thing. In fact, I think one of the Bitcoin Core supporters went on record saying that they believe that Bitcoin should be $100 fees per transaction.
Wow.
But that's what people want.
Yeah, I've heard that some of the people in the what's called Bitcoin Core, they want it to be...
A settlement layer.
Yeah, that settlement layer to where, you know, it's kind of like how back in the olden days, the banks would just use that $100,000 bill to send money between banks and, you know... Regular people never got to see that $100,000 bill. It was a settlement layer.
Segregated witness is being pushed by the DCG, but that fork, the development, will take the development from the core group to another corporation, a corporation called BitGo. And BitGo is putting themselves in the development as the middleman, a settlement layer before it hits the actual blockchain, similar to a bank. They're the ones that will have the development, the power, the choices, the regulation, and of course they are heavily invested by the DCG.
Okay. And also, so what it sounds like you're describing is a struggle between corporations here, and you know, there's no doubt that Bitcoin isn't, I don't think, as decentralized as a lot of people would want it to be. Roger said that when Bitcoin splits, this is supposed to happen, as I said, in about 4 or 5 weeks. When that happens, there could be a very contentious period and dangerous period of time in which you should not spend your Bitcoins due to something called a lack of what's called replay protection. Meaning if you spend your Bitcoins, they could get lost or stolen or something like that.
Or maybe you send it to the wrong type of thing. And Mark Edge accidentally wound up sending, I forget if it was Ether Classic to an Ether address or vice versa.
Yeah, he did that.
But he scanned the wrong QR code, and because it accepted it, this is a thing. So if you tried sending Bitcoin to a Dash address, your wallet that would say, yeah, this is invalid.
Right. But when the Bitcoin splits, the two chains have the same address structure.
Right.
And so unless you're paying close attention, you might be reversing the Bitcoin with the Bitcoin Cash or the Bitcoin with a Sanko 2X or the whatever it ends up being called. Anyway, I forget where I was going with that.
Don't spend your Bitcoin while
there's
all of these possible chains because you don't want to send your stuff to the wrong address.
But what he was saying was if for whatever reason you are going to want to trade this new Bitcoin, so it's going to be like Bitcoin 2 versus Bitcoin 1, basically. The one with the double size blocks and the one with the 1 megabyte. So 2 megabyte or 1 megabyte. And so the idea is when the split happens, if you don't have your Bitcoin on an exchange, then it will be very difficult. It could be very difficult for you to move the Bitcoin once it splits onto the exchange due to these issues, this turmoil that's basically going to be happening, which will be dangerous.
Let me ask this question. Which one actually winds up reducing the fees and allowing Bitcoin to actually be usable for these small transactions?
Well, both of them claim that their solution is going to reduce the fees, Daryl, although right now we haven't seen SegWit do any kind of fee reductions. So, you know, it remains to be seen whether that's actually going to play out because only 10% of the people who are using
One of the claims that I've heard is, well, the reason the fees aren't low right now is because there's these 2X people that are trying to
mess us up, right? That claim? Yeah, who knows? I mean, it's a nasty, ugly situation.
It's the whole, you know, vote for Republicans and we'll give you small government. But, well, we've got to increase government in this area, in this area, in this area because Democrats.
I have another success to report from New Hampshire. I'm cleaning up the quote now, but while I'm doing so, basically, you remember the Croydon situation, correct?
Our listeners probably don't. So what is it?
Can you summarize it real quick while I'm queuing up the data?
Croydon, I believe, was a situation where a school board, which had a liberty activist on it, ended up creating a program to allow people to take sort of like a voucher, basically, to a private school, including religious private schools. And there was a court case about that, and I forget what happened in the court case. Daryl, do you remember what happened with the Croydon?
I think the court basically said you can't do that, but then there was legislation that
changed that.
Authorized municipalities, if they don't have the full range of schools, which Croydon does not, then they can wind up giving something akin to a voucher, but they don't necessarily give it to the parents. They give it to the school.
I see.
So they pay a tuition, but it must be a non-profit, non-religious school, I believe.
So Jody Underwood is a Free Stater who has intermittently been, the president or the chair of the school board in Croydon. And she just posted a message that, quote, we are officially calling this effort done.
I've been learning that most of our health problems now come from the fact that we're missing the special sugar from vine ripened fruits and vegetables. They have their special names, and it's missing from our diet.
What's the sugar called? Fructose or what is it?
No, I don't know that they have like a. I think there's a complete of 16 different types of sugar. So I don't really have all of their names down, but those sugars actually surround all of our cells. So after the amino acid, the protein, after that, the outer cell is surrounded by these cells. And what's happening is that our killer cells are misreading the healthy cell as defective cells, and it's destroying them. That's the problem. Like rheumatoid arthritis is our killer cells attacking a healthy cell.
See, now, you look at life a different way than I do. I see people living longer than ever and living healthier, more active lives than ever. We have a greater abundance of different things that we can eat. People who have problems eating certain things, have more options now than they've ever had, and I just don't see the world in the same light of, oh my God, it's doomsday. By the time you're probably in your 20s or 30s, you've probably been pitched on some kind of network marketing thing, likely. By somebody? Yes. I mean, have you guys been, you guys have both.
I saw it, but I don't think I've ever been pitched on.
Nobody ever pitched on one.
Oh, actually, I take that back.
Amway, Quickstar, you know, so many of these.
There was one telephone thing that...
Also, there's a bunch of them that are like cryptocurrencies, too. So you got to look out. Like, network marketing is not necessarily bad. Just to be clear, like, I don't want, because I'm sure there's somebody out there who's like yelling at the radio, like, oh, network marketing is, no, it's, you're right, it's not necessarily bad. It's just that there have been a lot of companies over the years who have.
OneCoin is one of the cryptos.
Yeah, look out for that one. That isn't even really, as I understand it, even a cryptocurrency. It's just a straight up pyramid Ponzi scheme. So there's a lot of this stuff out there. Programs that purport to get you rich quick, just find three people to find three people to find three people, you know, that that kind of thing,
right?
And there are a lot of reasons why network marketing doesn't do what it promises to do for a lot of people. Certainly people who are good at sales are going to be better at doing something like network marketing, because, you know, sales is kind of a very lucrative profession. If you're good at selling things, if you're good at cold calling, if you're good at that, then you can do all right.
Just make a list of every person that you've ever contacted ever in life and start calling them.
Start
alienating
right now. Them. Yeah. this is, you're joking. That's, for those that don't know, that's a joke that references what they ask you to do when you join a network marketing
company. That's basically what they ask you to do.
It's not necessarily that people are desperate. It's just that, well,
really?
I guess to some extent they do want a way out, right? People want a way out of the rat race.
Right.
And this
and,
is,
you know, it sounds good of, hey, come to this seminar, and there's some guy that's like, all right, so you want to know what I did last weekend? Slideshow. Here's me on a yacht.
Yep.
In Bermuda. And then the next day, slideshow. That's me in the Bahamas. Slideshow. Yeah, that's me in Cozumel.
Yep.
Click.
That's right.
That's me at the ruins in Peru.
All because I found three people who found
this
three people.
This is me climbing the pyramids of Giza. And, you know, I did this because I have three friends that have three friends,
and you've got
three friends, right? Everybody has three friends. If you don't have three friends, you're a loser. You've got three friends. So just sign right here, and then that guy winds up getting commission on everybody that signs up at that meeting because, well, you know, like, the person that hosted the meeting was like his 27th downline.
Oh, man. It reminds me of All Advantage.
Oh, the old, wasn't that an advertising thing on the internet?
Yeah.
I remember that.
So, I
that was where you got paid, supposedly,
to look
at advertisements.
I participated in this.
Yeah. The privacy of Dash, I would say, is probably not the best privacy from what I understand. I'm not a cryptographic expert, but as I understand it, they've just basically done built-in mixing into Dash, so it's more private if you choose the option for the private send. Is what it's called. So that's not on by default. That's something that you can opt into. If you're looking for true privacy, I think probably Zcash would be one of the best options, or Monero.
Also Zencash, which is different from Zcash, but also uses
zero knowledge proofs.
As I understand it, those zero knowledge proofs.
Right.
But also the question was, how is Dash different? Well, it's a completely different cryptocurrency. So Dash...
Well, I mean, it was based on Litecoin, which was based on Bitcoin.
Right.
So it ain't that different, but it's faster.
Okay, well, a Nissan Xterra was, you know, designed after something that...
The Model T, right? Yeah.
Right. So, but it's on a completely different blockchain.
Correct.
Which is what I mean when
different,
I say it's
right.
a different thing. So
it didn't fork from Bitcoin's blockchain.
The Dash
blockchain.
Network
correct.
Does not rely on Bitcoin still existing.
That's correct.
Just like Litecoin does not rely on Bitcoin existing or any of these other things.
Dash is faster because it was built on Litecoin. It's actually, I believe it's even faster than
right.
Litecoin.
And Dash also has the instant send option to where you can include a slightly higher mining fee
That's
or whatever
correct.
They wind up calling their thing.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more all for free at freetalklive.com.